This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. The show originates from the Investar Tower building in Baton Rouge, and in studio is the 57th Governor, Jeffrey Martin Landry. Your number 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. I think it's the second or third time we've had the governor on since he was elected, and it's day 204, 30th day of July, 2024, 98 days away from another election in which we'll choose the President of the United States, 14 weeks from today. Later in the hour, Tyler Bridges. But Governor, you've been a busy man.
We've been busy. Yeah, we sure have. Of course, I stay busy, irrespective of what it is. I'm not one to sit around. And so we've done a lot. We've done a lot, and I think a lot of good things. And I think, a lot of the things that we've done basically are like seeds that will continue to sprout and do good things for the state.
What do you view as your principal accomplishments so far?
Look, I think we've had so many wins. I like to make sure that we live up to the promises that we make people, especially on a campaign trail, because I think that is the one thing that people that creates angst amongst the population is when politicians or those that seek their votes don't live up to the promises they make. And so I think when you look at the things that we went out there and we campaigned on and we started to deliver on, I could mark a number of wins. I think we had a great crime session, which was brief, but packed with a lot of good things. I think that we during the regular session, the things that we did on education are going to continue to sprout very meaningful things for the kids of the state. And we're working on the economy. And I think we've got some real good things that are working there as well. So we've got a number. I can't say that there's one thing that I'm the most proud of. I'm just really proud of the people of the state who seem to have been or seem to continue to be very responsive and want some institutional or structural changes to the state.
Do you still want a constitutional convention?
It's not so much what I want. It's so much of what we need. A lot of the things that I wanted during the session or wanted to try to accomplish in order to make our job as governor and working with the legislature easier, we got from a legislative standpoint. The thing that I think we all need is some reforming or refreshing or restructuring of the Constitution. So it's not so much what I want. I think it's so much of what we need. We can't really reform the tax code. We can do some things, and we will. But if you really want to take good structural changes to make Louisiana part of this new industrial South, then it has to be competitive on the tax side.
Any disappointments so far?
Any disappointments? No, not really. I mean, I can't think. I don't go back and say, I think that I am. It is. You could say it is a little disappointing that we're not going to be able to change some things in the Constitution or wholesale change some things. I think we've lost an opportunity. I don't know if we'll get to do it over the next couple of years. But I'm not one to say, to live back on there and say, hey, okay, we got it. We've done it. I understand where we are. And so now we're going to find a path to serve the people of the state.
Well, I've mentioned your backstory, and you've done a lot of things. You were a farmer, a law enforcement officer, a military veteran, congressman, attorney general, governor, lawyer, and you worked in the state legislature back in the day. Was that a kind of a framework for where you are now?
Well, I wasn't a farmer. I was a farm hand. Big difference.
Sugar cane, right?
Yeah,
right?
I count that. Yeah, I think, I think that when I look back at the things that I did in my life, and a lot of times when I go and speak and they read through all of those things, I tell people it's kind of like what happens to kids that were born in the 70s and Generation X, I guess that were ADD when the medication, they just bumped around. But I think that each one of the things that I did in my lifetime gave me an opportunity and a perspective to see things in a different light. Certainly the time I spent on the farm taught you hard work. You had to get up early in the morning and you worked late and worked hard, especially in the summer. The summers always seem to remind me of my farm time because it was hot.
Well, I count, I think, five governors you've worked with. If you could, kind of a lightning round here. Mike Foster, what about him? What's your impression or your remembrance of the late Governor Foster?
Yeah, oh, I had a great relationship with Mike because he was in the state Senate when I worked for Craig Romero. It's in that fact, him and Craig might have been seatmates in the Senate. You know, Mike was like a pragmatic governor. You know, when you think about where we were up until Mike Foster came along, we had some pretty colorful governors. And Mike was not really a colorful governor, but he was a very effective governor. I think he saw government more like a business. I never forget the first time I saw him at a political event when he decided that he was going to run. And he got up there and he said, look, I'm not much for speeches. I'm not much for doing these things, but elect me and I'm going to run the state in the river. And he got off the stage. I was like scratching my head. But he was very effective. You know, he was kind of like a quiet, pragmatic governor.
Yeah, and he was governor when we had money. And it's always nice to have money, isn't it?
It is. Believe you me, I've watched it. You know, I spent 8 years as the attorney general under some of the toughest economic times that the state government has had. You know, when both myself and Governor John Bel Edwards got elected, the state was on that fiscal cliff. And so I remember it.
Well, before we get to the other governors, the 0.45 cent sales tax is about to expire. That could create a big hole. The easy thing to do, I think, would be to renew it, but that's not your plan, is it?
No, I don't think so. I mean, and look, the budget that we put forth and that we're preparing for the state legislature anticipates not having the 0.45 cent sales tax being renewed. I think that I'm hoping and encouraging our state, our cabinet members to be able to create efficiencies like we did over at the Attorney General's office and see how much we can narrow that hole. And then whether or not we can restructure some things on the tax side that fill that the remainder of that hole and then also mm-hmm. gives us some opportunities to lower the income tax, maybe get rid of the inventory tax, get rid of corporate franchise tax, do some things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Now, Edwin Edwards, the next governor you worked with, he was born in 1927 and Huey Long was elected the next year. You were born in 1970 and Edwin Edwards was elected the next year. And people may be surprised, but I think you had a fairly close relationship with him, didn't you?
I did. Both him and some of the folks that worked with him, I remember because Craig actually got elected when I started to work in the Senate under Romero. He had got elected in a special, which put him right. I think Edwin was in for a year or two between that time. And of course, we all know that the Senate seems to share a special relationship with the governor. Certainly back then, it was even closer. And so we got to know and got to work with him. I went dove hunting a couple of times with him up in Lake Providence. You know, they had those big dove hunts during, yeah. I think Francis Thompson did those dove hunts back then. And of course, I was 21, 22. And so it was kind of, it was like a real fun time. You know, there was a lot of things moving around but I did get to watch the effectiveness that Edwin had, you know, for good or for bad. He was extremely effective. He was an unbelievable communicator. A lot of people will say he did a lot of great things, mostly for himself, but he could have done a lot better for the state as well. It depends on who you talk to. But did get an opportunity to watch how he worked through it. It was a patently different process between Edwin Edwards and Mike Foster, right? I mean, two completely different people.
Right. Have you always been a Republican?
Always. I registered as a Republican in 1988.
When you were 18.
I was 18 when I turned 18.
Barely.
I registered. Yeah. Because I went into the National Guard at 17. My mother signed me in. You would not have wanted to interview me at 17, Jim.
Maybe I would have.
You might have. You might have had real fun with it. My mother would have probably said no. But, you know, I remember going into the courthouse in St. Martin Parish. I never forget this. And registering to vote. Ronald Reagan was at the end of two terms. And so I signed up, and he was a Republican, so I checked Republican. And I turned my paperwork mm-hmm. in, and the nice lady who was there, who had been there forever, gave it back to me. She said, I think you made a mistake. You know, because St. Martin Parish was a big Democratic stronghold. Right. I said, what do you mean? She said, well, if you register as a Republican, you won't be able to vote. I'm like, well, I won't be able to vote, you know. And you know, she kind of alluded to the fact that, that mostly everybody was a Democrat.
Well, that was that would be in closed primaries. That's and you're correct. An advocate of closed primaries.
I am.
Why?
I am because I think that, look, I think that when you look at those, again, if you look at those states that seem to be able to have a great government, I think that having a two-party system has served us well in this country. And I think that when one party has an opportunity to choose their candidate and the other party has an opportunity to choose their candidate, and then those two meet on the ballot under which everyone else gets to elect, then I think it serves well.
And as it stands now in the federal cycle, 2 years from now, we will have closed primaries.
Right, which I ran in. I mean, this is nothing new. I mean, what I'm offering is not something that we haven't done before. It's not something that the state hadn't done.
But we'll do it again in 2 years, and we'll have another segment with Governor Jeffrey Martin Landry after this timeout. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing, and another segment with Jeff Landry, the governor of Louisiana, who, as stated, was a member of Congress and attorney general. I know he liked being AG, and he held that post for 8 years. But he also had 2 years in Washington, and those who knew you then said you really liked it. Do you have Potomac fever?
Not anymore. I got rid of it.
But you liked it. That's a great city, isn't it?
It is. It is. It's an unbelievable city. And actually serving in the U.S. House is was an honor. I mean, I met so many people. And, of course, the pace was a little bit more in tune with, you know, my character, mm-hmm. right, and the things that I like because it's fast-paced and you move real fast. We did a lot. In fact, I did an interview the other day. You know, I came in that 2010 election cycle, which brought 95 new members to the House of Representatives, the largest class, I think, since 1927 or 21.
That was the shellacking that President Obama referred to, and you came in, and you served one term, and they took your seat away from you.
Like Davy Crockett.
But you liked it, and the speculation for a while was that you would run for the U.S. Senate, which you still may do, but there is an election in 2 years. Is that a possibility?
No. I like the job that I do. I think that Louisiana has a great opportunity to really, we really have an opportunity to turn Louisiana, you know, into a great position. You know, we can get where the wind is to our back, mm-hmm. and we can really fill our sails, something that I think we haven't had an opportunity to do. Look, I remember my father was one who discouraged me from trying to run against Charles Mustaine at the time. He was like, you should go run for the Senate when Mary Landrieu was running. And, of course,
You might have won.
Strong. I might have won, and another we'd be having a different conversation.
Another congressman did, but Bill Cassidy, I think it's fair to say, will have a tough race, and hopefully we'll be talking with you about that one in 2 years, but you say you will not be a candidate. Now, another one of your Acadiana people, Kathleen Blanco, was one of the governors you knew and served with. Your thoughts about her?
Yeah, you know, I knew Nicole, her daughter Nicole, and a number of the family throughout, because we both grew mm-hmm. up in Lafayette. Kathleen had a rough time. I mean, you know, that, you know, after Katrina, I don't think it was real hard for her to recover. Of course, her and Craig had a very contentious relationship. Her, Craig, Troy Hebert at the time. You remember that was
your buddy.
Seemed like the Acadiana folks couldn't get along. And so I kind of
now he loves you.
Was able, yeah. Oh look, he beat me. I mean,
it's easy to love someone you're with.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah. Which was another interesting time. You know, I think that race taught me a lot as well. And of course, you know, and so I think that it was tough. I think it was hard for Kathleen to really recover after Katrina. I mean, that was a really shocking time, but never did hold. Mm-hmm. In fact, I visited with her a number of times as Attorney General and still see. In fact, I talked to Monique, who's now the parish president
yep,
over
she's doing well.
In Lafayette. Yeah. I think she's doing
okay.
well.
Yeah. And then after Kathleen, we had Bobby Jindal.
Yeah.
You know him well.
Yeah. I mean,
actually, believe it or not, he's a few months younger than you are, and he's been out of office for 9 years. But anyway.
Well, he got elected real young.
Real young.
And of course, Mike, you know, Foster just, you know, adored him. He was like an adoptive son to Mike. And so that's kind of how I got to know him. And yeah, you know, was able to work with him, of course, through that, through his two terms. Mm-hmm. So I was in Congress at the end, towards the end of his second term. Yeah.
And then there was John Bel Edwards, who you crossed swords with a time or two.
Yeah, well, it was different. You know, it was different. I mean, we both came in at the exact same time. I think it was a big shocker for a lot of people in Louisiana that Louisiana had elected a Democrat mm-hmm. governor, in which was a movement of the Republican Party growing throughout the South. Mm-hmm. And of course, we came in at a time when state government was facing a huge, huge deficit that he had to fill, and so there was a lot to do. You know, of course, again, you got to remember, for me, it was natural because when I got elected into Congress, I came in during that wave, and Obama was the president. The Senate was still controlled by the Democrats, so I was used to fighting on ideological principles. So you know, it didn't bother me in the least bit.
Last time we talked, Governor, you said that you thought we were in a culture war in this country, and I think that's fair, no matter how you stand on any issue. And some people are on either side, and most people are somewhere in the middle. But that was brought to bear with the Ten Commandments. Your thoughts about what has happened since that law was passed and signed by you?
Yeah, you know, it's amazing. I guess you could call me naive. But I never believed that was going to be such a either contentious or such a spark out there, such a hot topic, if mm-hmm. you would. I mean, look, you know, when you think about it, and you know, I did an interview the other day in with a reporter, and we were talking about it. The Ten Commandments is like the foundation for our rule of law. I mean, Moses has always been considered the lawgiver, right? And those commandments have been a tenet. I didn't know they were a bad way to live your life. And I really think the Supreme Court got it wrong. I think the founders got it right when they wrote the Constitution and when they wrote the Bill of Rights. I think the Supreme Court breathed, this life into this separation of church and state, which was never defined in the First Amendment. And so I think that, you know, I met with the Attorney General. I think she feels the same way I feel. And I think that we're going to position this thing in a way that we can actually take it to the Supreme Court and win. Now, that may cause some people to say, well, I can't believe why we do this. And the report actually said, what about, kids who parents are atheists or whatever? Well, you don't have to look at it. I mean, like, is it a bad way to live your life? Thou shalt not kill, thou shalt not steal.
Well, we have had one professor on this show who said he won't have it in his classroom, and he's a college professor. So what happens to people who object in that way?
Well, and I'd have to go back into the statute and look, and I don't know if it pertains to higher ed, but it's certainly from K through 12. And so maybe I'll tell him just, you know, don't teach in K through 12, and he'll be all right.
I think it applies to colleges, too. It does. But it's an issue that some would say is a distraction. We have huge issues.
Well, I mean, why is it a distraction? We don't say it's a distraction at the Supreme Court. It's on the back. It's on the doors of the United States Supreme Court. Moses is the only face that faces the Speaker mm-hmm. of the House in the House chamber. It is riddled inside of, or woven, better word is woven inside the fabric of what America's law and government is. And mm-hmm. so the fact that it is such a big deal questions whether or not those people actually believe in America. You know, I mean, I'm thinking about it. I mean, think America was designed to say that you, Jim, have natural rights, that government cannot take away from you, that government cannot infringe upon you. Those rights are only given to you by God. If there is no God, then you don't have the right.
But then only government can give you that right. Separation of church and state. But you're going to make the argument before the court, and it'll be fascinating to see how it goes. But
oh, absolutely. Look, I hope that we could come in and spend a whole two segments on it.
Well, I'd love that. I'd love that. What about the shooting of former President Trump? How did that affect you? What were your immediate thoughts and your thoughts since?
You know, the sad part is that when I heard about it, it was a shocker for what it means to the nation. It didn't shock me that it did. You know, 2 weeks before he was in New Orleans, and we got to ride in the Suburban with him, both Sharon and I, and he was actually talking about security. And he said, you know, when I become the nominee, I get more security. I'll never forget that, because when they told me about the shooting, I thought about what he was saying. And I said, you know what? If someone was going to shoot at him, they had to do it. I mean, that was a week before the convention. And so once the convention happens, he gets way more security. We all knew, it was no secret to anyone out there, that they had been asking for more security.
But it says something about our country. And, of course, it was with an assault weapon, too, which makes it a much easier shot.
Well, I mean,
148 yards, but
we shot John Kennedy. They shot John Kennedy with a carbine. I mean, that was an assault rifle. That was
what they say.
That's what they say, right? No, exactly.
A $12.88 rifle, by the way.
It does. I mean, look. I think that shooting is going to affect the country, just like the assassination attempts and actual assassinations that occurred in the 60s from then President John Kennedy, his brother, Robert F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, go down the line.
George Wallace in 72, but hopefully it'll affect us in
a
good way. Thank you, Governor. Always a pleasure. Keep going.
Thank you.
See you soon. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana, Robin Dow producing, and we turn the page, and we're joined by Tyler Bridges, the reporter that Jeff Landry was referencing a few times. He did a couple of interviews with him over the last week or so, and there was a profile in The Advocate in Picayune about the 57th governor, and Tyler has covered a few governors. I remember him back on the trail in 1991 when Edwin Washington Edwards unseated Buddy Romer, and of course David Duke had his rise, which was the catalyst for two books by Tyler Bridges, The Rise of David Duke and The Rise and Fall of David Duke. And good morning to you, sir.
Good morning, Jim.
You've covered a few governors, and I asked Jeff Landry to compare the governors that he has known and worked with. What about how he compares with the ones who preceded him that you know about, Tyler?
Yeah, Jim, it's a great great question, and I thought your questions to the governor were on point for the last half hour. I think this governor is a very political guy. I think he's very focused on the political chessboard, rewarding friends, punishing enemies, and advancing his political interests. But I think your listeners also got a sense of him as the number of times he laughed. You know, you had John Bel Edwards on your show every month for, what was it,
93 months.
Okay, 93 months. And John Bel Edwards was not a guy who would laugh very easily. And Jeff Landry really is. He's a very relatable guy. Even when I was asking him tough questions, he could come back a minute later and laugh. And your listeners heard that side of him too. And I think that's, you know, it's a very appealing side if you can connect to somebody who laughs like that. So very political, fun extrovert guy to be around. In my interview with him, I asked him, what is your agenda for the rest of the year? And that was an opportunity for him to expound on the various things he was doing, but he really didn't talk much about that. And so it doesn't seem to be he's much of a policy guy. And remember when he ran for governor last year, as you know, Jim, he did not campaign on many issues other than improving schools and going after crime. And he did get an extensive anti-crime package through the legislature earlier this year, but what does he want to do now after that? Now, he did talk to you about some changes he wants to make in the tax system, but beyond that, we really haven't seen much.
Well, he's 204 days into a four-year administration, so he has almost 3.5 years to go, and he told you and repeated it here that he will not be running. As of now, no plans to challenge Bill Cassidy in 2026. But there is a governor's election in 2027, and you and I both heard John Bel Edwards in April refer to his career, saying that this isn't his last rodeo. What did that mean, and is there a possibility we will have the matchup of titans in 2027 with JBE against JML?
Yeah, I would really doubt that John Bel Edwards would want to challenge him in 2027 unless Jeff Landry screwed up in some major way. I think John Bel Edwards, before he left the governor's mansion, he was telling people privately that he wanted to make money And I'm assuming he's making a lot of money now for his future years, for him and his family. And my best guess is he'll look at it in 8 years. Again, assuming that Jeff Landry doesn't undergo some sort of major scandal by 2027.
Well, some governors were accused of making money off the governorship. I remember James Gill, the late, great James Gill, wrote of Edwin Edwards in his final term that it provided him with felonious opportunities he could not resist. Generally speaking, if you're in the private sector and you're a former governor or a former congressman or U.S. senator, it's a pretty good gig, isn't it?
Yeah, or a president. You know, the pay of the governor is, I believe, $120,000 a year. $130,000 a year. I would argue that's underpaid. Now, people could say, wow, it's a lot more than what the average person makes in this state. Sure, but people who run for governor typically have opportunities to make a lot of money doing something else. And I think we should pay people in public office a decent prevailing wage, market wage, because they're making big decisions for us. So again, John Bel Edwards now has an opportunity as a lawyer, and he probably can serve as a consultant on boards and things like that to make a lot of money, and can't begrudge him for that as long as he's, you know, not because of something specifically he did when he was governor. And I think certainly Bobby Jindal is doing well, but you know, Bobby Jindal is a brilliant guy, and it's understandable that he would have opportunities as well.
Well, it is public service, but you're right that the governor probably makes less than any of his cabinet secretaries. And
it was interesting because Jeff Landry told you when you asked him the question about the 0.45-cent sales tax, which expires in mid-2025, and whether the legislature, whether he supported the renewal of it. He has not ruled it out. He didn't to me in my interview last week, and he did not with you today. But he has increased salaries of cabinet officials. He also increased the spending by a lot for his anti-crime package. So it's interesting as to whether he would be able to find ways to save money after taking various steps to increase government spending.
877-217-5757. And as you know, we have a lot of people in academia, particularly higher education, who listen to this program and are concerned about how higher ed will fare if budget cuts are in the offing. And the governor has few options to cut, and one of those is higher ed. And King Alexander, the previous president of LSU, said he endured 13 budget cuts during his 6 years on the job at LSU. And a listener asks about whether we're headed in that direction if we don't renew the 0.45-cent sales tax.
Well, yeah, as you mentioned, Jim, there the really the only two main areas of the budget that are not protected are spending on higher ed and for healthcare for the poor. And I was talking to a higher education official yesterday. You know, the governor's office asked higher ed officials to prepare a contingency budget with 20% cuts, which this official said to me would be just devastating, even mentioned as the possibility of having to close LSU Eunice, which coincidentally or not coincidentally is where the Speaker of the House is from, and would do everything he can to keep that university open. And so the governor's office and legislators would be facing some hard choices next year. Everybody likes the idea of lower taxes. I pointed out in the story that I wrote in Sunday's Advocate that 0.45-cent sales tax costs most people about $65 a year. So that's the question that legislators will have to face. You know, is it worth a tax cut of about $65 a year for most Louisianians for these budget cuts, or is the idea of reducing government so important that it should take place and the government programs will, some government programs in higher education and healthcare will fall by the wayside.
877-217-5757, your number for Tyler Bridges. Let's go to Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hello, Phil, you're on the air.
Hello. Good morning, Mr. Bridges. I think that basically we have getting a big fat fail from our governor. I think he is on track to try to get himself into Washington, and God knows the religious choices he's making are completely unconstitutional.
Well, he said on the show, Phil and Tyler, and I know both of you heard it, that he believes that this Ten Commandments bill, which he signed, will pass muster with the Supreme Court. Tyler, what do you think?
Well, it's not passed court muster before, and Louisiana would be the first state to have every classroom. And as you pointed out, Jim, it's not just K through 12. And you pointed out to the governor, he didn't know it also includes universities and colleges to have the Ten Commandments on their wall. But we do have a very conservative Supreme Court that's willing to overturn precedent to enact conservative policy. So I guess that's what the governor is betting on.
The governor, he embraces this culture war, and he is, I think, sincere. I don't think there's any doubt that he believes what he's saying. And unlike the two U.S. senators, he was never a Democrat, and he didn't work as a Democrat to be elected like Senator Kennedy, or as a Democrat to defeat a Republican, as Bill Cassidy did with Bobby Jindal. For those who say that this is an act with him, Tyler, I don't think that dog will hunt.
No, he's clearly a conservative, and I thought it was an interesting story that he told to you about registering to vote at 18 at the St. Martinville courthouse in 1988 and checking the Republican box at time when everybody was a Democrat. And clearly he's a conservative, and he's trying to enact conservative policies and has had some success already in his first 6+ months as governor.
Kevin in North Baton Rouge. Hello, Kevin. You're on.
Yes. I want to know, what are the people in Louisiana getting out of castrating people and putting up this, nothing wrong with the Ten Commandments and stuff, but what is that doing to your pockets?
All right. Well, that's what I asked the governor about, it being a distraction. But he pushed back on that, Tyler.
Yeah, he did. But I think Kevin raises a good question. How many jobs is all that going to create? There are certain members of the legislature, social conservatives, they're called, who these are the issues that they really, really care about. But again, I think Kevin does raise a good question. Is that going to lead more companies to invest in Louisiana? Is that going to find ways for companies to want to find to hire more workers, and so who can then pay more taxes so the government can provide more services to the public?
877-217-5757. Time for a break, and we're 14 weeks away from November 5th, and we'll talk with Tyler Bridges about what's coming in the next big election, the one that involves the presidency. More Talk Louisiana after this quick timeout. This is Jim Inkster, and thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. I recall when I was a young lad in Louisiana, you had to be a North Louisiana Protestant to be elected governor, and that was how John J. McKithen defeated Chep Morrison, who was a New Orleans Catholic, in 1964. And since Edwin Edwards, we've elected a lot of South Louisiana Catholics, including Jeffrey Martin Landry and John Bell Edwards and Kathleen Blanco. Edwin Edwards was the first. And now, on the national scene, Catholics are starting to get traction. Joe Biden became the first Catholic to be elected since John Kennedy, the only Catholic to be president other than Kennedy. And J.D. Vance is a Catholic convert. Vance, as we know, is like Jeff Landry, a true believer on the culture war, some would say to a fault. And his presidential running mate, the former president, Donald John Trump, over the weekend, Robin has the cut, made some remarks that some found a bit unsettling about Christians and their voting and how important this election is. And in his words, if things go right on November 5th, 14 weeks from today, Christians can sit back and relax and perhaps not have to worry about another election. Here is the former president.
Again.
And again, Christians, get out and vote just this time. You won't have to do it anymore. 4 more years. You know what? It'll be fixed. It'll be fine. You won't have to vote anymore, my beautiful Christians. I love you, Christians. I'm a Christian. I love you. Get out. You got to get out and vote. In 4 years, you don't have to vote again. We'll have it fixed so good you're not going to have to vote.
All right. Now, Tyler, that is an amazing statement. Your thoughts?
Well, former President Trump is, he makes a lot of amazing statements since he first announced his campaign for 2015 for president in 2015. And he's certainly a guy who gets a lot of attention, and that's going to be a comment that probably will animate his Christian base and probably also animate those who think his election as president would be just a terrible thing for this country.
877-217-5757. This shapes up as a photo finish between Kamala Harris and former President Trump. And it'll come down to a few states that don't involve votes in Louisiana. And Tyler, George Will, in his column that appears in the Advocate and Picayune today, notes that the top 10 states have well over 50% of the population, and the smaller 10 have less than 1% of the U.S. population. Louisiana's right in the middle. Right in the middle. We are the 25th largest state in the country, but we'll get no action, none at all, because of the Electoral College and the prospect of one candidate winning here. So what about the Electoral College? Joe Biden yesterday had a bold, sweeping reform plan for the U.S. Supreme Court. It seems like we're in a situation where certainly it's not one man, one vote when it comes to the presidential election, Tyler.
Yeah, obviously our founding fathers got an awful lot of things right when it came to the Constitution, but it's just hard to understand these days why we would have the Electoral College. Why is it that the voters in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, Nevada, why are they getting so much more attention? Why does their vote count so much more than the people in Louisiana or Wyoming or Montana or wherever? It just seems like a relic from the past. It's just hard to understand why we still have it.
877-217-5757. James in Metairie. James, you're on Talk Louisiana with Tyler Bridges.
Well, good morning, Jim and Tyler. Donald Trump. If Donald Trump were speaking before a group of Satanists, he just said he's a Satanist just to get more votes. I want to ask Tyler this. About 2 years ago, Jeff Landry, in reaction to the Dobbs decision, told the people of Louisiana, if they don't like the laws on abortion in Louisiana, they can just move to another state. How irresponsible where we have a state that's losing population. Thank you.
All right.
I got to say that James asked a really interesting question, because something that conservatives have pointed out, that the population loss during the years that John Bel Edwards is governor, and to say that he was a failed governor, I guess it's a good thing to point out as a measure of the governor is the state growing population. I remember Buddy Romer, the former governor, in the final years of his life was made the point of how much Louisiana had not been keeping pace with other states, particularly in the South, in terms of population growth. And you want your people to stay in the state. And I guess then Attorney General Landry, I don't know if he would make that comment today, but it's a pretty radical thing for him to have said.
877-217-5757. And I've done this for a little while. Yesterday, when I had Dan Moldea on, who was speaking from the left side of the spectrum, I was questioned by some conservatives who said I wasn't hard enough on him, and I knew this would come with Jeff Landry. But the idea of an interview is for the guest to reveal himself or herself. It's not about the host pounding away at the guest and humiliating them, but a lot of these people who would never call the show, they send these, Tyler, these incendiary messages they want me to send to the governor of Louisiana or to another guest, and that's just not the way it is. This is about information. It's not about humiliation, and Jeff Landry, to his credit, he knows our audience is probably not as, shall we say, in his court as Moon Griffon's audience. But he came on the show, and he came in studio, and he looked the host right in the eyes. So I commend him for doing that, and I think he revealed a lot about where he wants to lead the state.
I could completely agree, and that was the approach, Jim, that I took in the story that I wrote. That was in Sunday's Advocate. We want to try to tell people or have through our work, the public get more a better idea of who our elected officials are. And, you know, I asked Jeff Landry some tough questions. And, you know, the idea that you could ask somebody a question, an elected official who's experienced, and have them fall apart and reveal everything, it just doesn't work like that. Oftentimes, the most revealing comments come from just kind of a simple question or an unexpected question so that the person reveals themselves. So I'm in complete agreement with you, is that what we want them to do is to reveal themselves, provide the best truth we can, and let your listeners or my readers then choose how they want to take that information.
And it is apparent, as I stated, that Jeffrey Martin Landry is not playing any games, like some other politicians who I believe are playing games. For example, our junior Senator John Kennedy, he was either faking it 20 years ago or he's faking it now. He can't be the same person. You can't have an epiphany like he did and go from way on one side to way on the other without politics being involved. And Jeffrey Martin Landry, Tyler, has shown that politics are involved. That's why we have a second majority black congressional district, and that's why he vetoed a bill that the trial lawyers found near and dear, because he had support from those communities. And he even remarked that as governor, you have to cater to those who brought you to the dance.
Yeah, well, in our election system, we don't have public financing. We have people, candidates, getting money from out there. And trial lawyers were a very important source of money for Jeff Landry rather than against him. And so then he chose to pass a bill or to support legislation that went through that the trial lawyers wanted and that the business interest did not want. And that was a bit of a surprise compared to the record of past governors. But I'll tell you one thing I think about Jeff Landry is I think people who don't like him have a tendency to underestimate him. He's a very skilled political figure. He won the Super Bowl of Louisiana politics to be elected governor, and he did it rather handily. And, you know, I think people can have questions about what to say now that he is governor. Exactly what is he trying to do? He hasn't really made that clear yet. You know, during the regular session we just had, he didn't really seem to care too much beyond trying to get a constitutional convention and expand his already considerable powers as governor. So, you know, what is he trying to do for the rest of the year is not clear when I asked him last week. And what does he want to do next year, again, beyond taxes? It's not entirely clear.
Jared on Essen. Jared, you're on with Tyler. Good morning, sir.
Yes, hi. Your guest had mentioned as an argument against the law putting the Ten Commandments in classrooms that it wouldn't help create jobs. I would disagree with that. I think I could make an indirect argument that it would. But also, I'm wondering if that's a standard that he applies to all laws, that if it doesn't make jobs, then we shouldn't do it.
Well, I don't want to put words in Tyler's mouth, but jobs are a bigger issue than the Ten Commandments in the classroom. And not only could this, it could keep people from actually coming to Louisiana. We wouldn't want to lose the Super Bowl, would we, Tyler?
No, and I guess if you are a strong social conservative, maybe you want to be in a state that has those kinds of laws.
And it might attract people along those lines, but there is a cost in time and energy, which may be the biggest cost of all. And that's what I meant by a distraction, is that this is energy that perhaps could be used for more fruitful matters.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know where to go when somebody agrees with me. But Tyler, I think this governor is—he's going to be an active guy, as he told you. I don't move slow.
No, he's from the time he was a youth in St. Martinville. He's been a hyperactive guy, and I think we'll continue seeing that as governor.
Peripatetic, Jeff Landry. Back tomorrow. Stay tuned.